How did Pizarro do it? Sooner or later, everyone who studies the Inca confronts this question. Henry Dobbins wondered about it too. The empire was as populous, rich, and well-organized as any in history. But no other fell before such a small force. Pizarro had only 168 men and 62 horses. Researchers have often wondered whether the Inca collapse betokens a major historical lesson. The answer is yes, but the lesson was not grasped until recently. The basic history of the empire was known well enough by the time Dobbins began reading the old colonial accounts. According to Cabello Balboa's chronology, Pachacuti died peacefully in 1471. His son, Tupa Inca, long the military commander, now took the imperial crown, a multicolored braid twisted around the skull like a headband, from which hung a red tasseled fringe that fell across the forehead. Carried on a golden litter, the Inca did not walk in public, Tupa Inca appeared with such majesty, according to the voyager Pedro Sarmiento de Gamboa, that people left the roads along which he had to pass, and ascending the hills on either side, worshipped and adored him by pulling out their eyebrows and eyelashes. Minions collected and stored every object he touched, food waste included, to ensure that no lesser persons could profane these objects with their touch. The ground was too dirty to receive the Inca's saliva, so he always spat into the hand of a courtier. The courtier wiped the spittle with a special cloth and stored it for safekeeping. Once a year, everything touched by the Inca, clothing, garbage, bedding, saliva, was ceremonially burned. Tupa Inca inaugurated the Inca custom of marrying his sister. In fact, Tupa Inca may have married two of his sisters. The practice was genetically unsound, but logically consistent. Only close relatives of the Inca were seen as of sufficient purity to produce his heir. As Incas grew in grandeur, more purity was required. Finally, only a sister would do. The Inca's sister wives accompanied him on military forays, along with a few hundred or thousand of his subordinate wives. The massive scale of these domestic arrangements seems not to have impeded his imperial progress. By his death in 1493, Tupa Inca had sent his armies deep into Ecuador and Chile, doubling the size of Tawantinsuyo again. In terms of area conquered during his lifetime, he was in the league of Alexander the Great and Genghis Khan. Tupa Inca's death set off a fight for the royal fringe. Tawantinsuyo did not have strict succession rules. Instead, the Inca selected the son he thought most qualified. Tupa Inca had more than 60 sons from all of his wives, according to Sarmiento de Gamboa, so he had a lot of choice. Alas, Tupa Inca apparently selected one son, but then changed his mind on his deathbed and selected another. Factions formed around each son, leading to a melee. The first son was banished or killed, and the second took the name Huayna Capac and became the Inca. Because the new Inca was still a teenager, his name means munificent youth, two of his uncles served as regents. One uncle tried to usurp power, but was killed by the other. Eventually, the Inca grew old enough to take the reins. Among his first official acts was killing two of his own brothers to avoid future family problems. Then he, like his father, married his sister. Huayna Capac was not a military adventurer like his father. He initially seems to have viewed his role mainly as one of consolidation rather than conquest, perhaps because Tawantinsuyo was approaching the geographic limits of governability. Communication down the long north-south spine of the empire was stretched to the limit. Much of Huayna Capac's time was devoted to organizing the empire's public works projects. Often these were more political than practical. Because the Inca believed that idleness fomented rebellion, the Spanish traveler Pedro Cieza de León reported, he ordered unemployed work brigades to move a mountain from one spot to another for no practical purpose.